The great land is bathed in the red light of dusk. Those 7 days have almost passed. Travis, drunk, and worst of all,
Say Mike! Me! I'm Mike! I'm here!
Previously on the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program.
For a long time, I used to go out in a blazer, because that's my... I just like wearing a blazer. I like the look, and it's like you're wearing a bunch of pockets, which is the benefit to it. Like, we don't get to wear purses as men. See, we wear blazers.
It's like a torso cargo pants.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's or wearing a vest or something.
Just sold me on a blazer, man.
Yeah.
No, torso cargo pants? That sounds great.
That's what we should. You know what? Actually, I think.
But it's also classy.
Yeah.
You could market this to a whole new segment of the population that would never buy a blazer if you call them torso cargo pants.
Welcome to this thing we call the Dubfod. My name is Mike. I am joined, of course, by my good friend, Mr. Drunkard STL.
Mike. How you doing, buddy?
Drunk, I'm so great.
Good.
There's so much to talk about, guys. So much going on in the world. Guys, coming up after the break, we are going to be talking to comedian Andrew Heaton. He has a new book out. It is called Los Angeles is... What is it? Los Angeles is... guys, I say it later on. I have it written down. He wrote a poetry book about how L.A. is ugly and you shouldn't go there.
Yeah, I mean, I got to say, I don't think I would be a fan of L.A. myself.
Drunk. My DMs have been... lighting up.
Blowing up? You feel like a 13-year-old girl?
Because what people want, Drunk.
What do they want?
They want the hot goss.
Which, they're, you know, that's... if we got anything, it's the hot goss, for sure.
There are people, Drunk, who are lucky enough to follow you on the Book of Faces.
Uh-huh.
And they saw that you have news. And the ladies... They have arrived in our chat room, Drunk, because
have they now?
They want a romantic tale, and I don't want to have to pry it out of you, Drunk. I think you just need to give them the romantic tale.
Okay. So you want me to start now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Saturday, go to work. You're motioning to me. What's up?
No, you're good. Good. By the way, this new sangria I got, don't like it.
Yeah, it's just okay.
Tastes kind of meaty.
I thought it tasted a little bit rindy, but that's neither here nor there.
It tastes like meat. It tastes like meat juice. I don't like it. I'm sorry, Drew. Go ahead.
That's okay. So Saturday, I got work, and so I get off work approximately 4:00. Go home, and I find a picture with me and my lady on it on the door.
On the door?
On the door.
On, like, the front door?
On the front door.
Okay.
Which, sidebar, and it's us, it's us cheering some shouts. So,
I didn't know what any of those words were that you just said.
We're cheersing some shots in the picture.
Oh, cheersing some shots. Okay.
We just put our sign in our yard.
They're already saying congrats drunk in the chat room. They don't even know what happens yet. How can they already be congrats drunking?
Well, I mean, if they saw it on the Book of Faces.
Right.
So on that particular day, we got our sign in our yard for our house to be put up for sale with a coming soon.
It's a big day.
So part of me didn't even think about it. I thought she was just being silly and putting, you know, anybody who came to the house fucking sees a picture of us cheersing.
Cheersing.
Here you go. Enjoy the house. You know,
guys, just so you know, some fun folks live here.
Yeah.
And it could be yours. You could continue on the legacy of fun. You could
continue the fun. Yes, right. Exactly. So just for S's and G's, I lift the picture up and there's some writing on the back. Then it says something to the effect of, I don't know, wash up and get dressed and daddy.
So like take a shower, bathe yourself. You're going to want to be clean for this.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't really put two and two together.
So did you not shower?
I did not shower.
Oh, drunk.
It gets to be about 6:20 or so. My lady texts me and she's like, did you get your three notes?
Oh, there was three notes.
And I said, well, I got one of them.
Was there a clue on the first one telling you where the second one was? Did she send you on a scavenger hunt?
She somewhat did, yes.
Okay.
So the second one was in the shower.
Oh, that it was supposed to go. Okay, so that was the clue.
Well, yeah, it said something about getting washed up, but I didn't really, whatever. I took a shower this morning.
Yeah, I do what I want.
I took a shower this morning. What am I double showering for?
Right.
Whatever. So my buddy Tom came over, and on Thursday I had a wiffle ball game, and he had talked about coming over Saturday after I'd gotten off work to help me fix a door, which he did help me do.
So you're at home fixing doors, ignoring notes.
And then my lady calls me and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, nothing. What's up? She's like, are you not ready to go? I'm like, no. So I
hope this is the romantic tale that everybody was hoping.
So, I mean, as soon as I got home, I got in my room. She's got two different outfits laid out for me.
Oh, she picked out clothes for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Your best outfit?
Two outfits that were approved by her, I guess.
Was that where the third note was?
The third note was in the pocket of the long sleeve shirt of the I did not choose because it was an outside activity. It was 100 fucking degrees that day.
So you got none of the notes.
I got the first one.
That the scavenger was on the door. Hunt eluded you.
So she's like, I hope you're ready because he's going to be there any minute. I'm like,
who's he?
Exactly. Who is he?
Right.
And then I lower my phone and I look at Tom and I'm like, are you my chauffeur tonight? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, I had no clue. So, okay. Sounds good. Daddy, daddy. Fucking smoke a cig, drink a beer, fucking head out to the FanDuel Sports Book and Racetrack.
Fairmount Park.
Which used to be Fairmount Park.
Oh, it's not Fairmount Park anymore?
No, it's FanDuel
Sports Book. Do they still do the horsey races?
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. Okay, but FanDuel bought it?
Yeah, and you can place all sports bets
there. Probably wasn't that expensive.
I couldn't imagine it being that expensive, though.
In the chat, they're saying that they want to see you do an escape room. That would probably be fun.
So
you had no idea you were on a scavenger hunt?
No.
Wow.
And then, so, get ready to get in the car. Tom hands me a note.
Fourth note.
Now I'm starting to put two and two together.
Oh, some shit's going down.
Some shit's going down, yeah. And by the way, so, like, me and my lady wear these silicone rings. We have been for the last couple months, whatever.
I've noticed that. I think I even asked you about it, and you were cagey in your response.
It was just a ring.
Right. Is it a promise
ring? It said kisses on it.
It says kisses?
My black one did. This one does not.
Oh, this is a new one.
This is my engagement ring.
Yes. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
So you arrive at FanDuel Fairmount Park.
Yep. And it just so happened. Well, so we were going to go there anyway because it's my uncle's birthday party. And we always go to Fairmount Park to watch the ponies for his birthday party every year. So that was already expected.
So you already knew you were going?
I already knew a good chunk of my family was going to be there.
Okay.
And I already knew that's where I was going.
So you had already planned on going there?
Yes.
Okay.
So, but I get there, and a bunch of my friends are there.
That you weren't expecting to be
there. That I did not invite. And there's a good 10 to 12 of them.
Guys, I'd like to point out that I was not invited. I was not notified of this at all. I could have gone to Fairmount Park. Fairmount Park's fun.
Yeah.
Wasn't called. Not Drunk's friend.
I'm going to tell Wendy you're upset. Okay. And then her mom's there.
Her mom?
Yeah.
Who? And that would be unusual for her to be there?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
He actually hands me another note while we're in the parking lot. Can't really remember what any of these notes really say.
So Tommy's just loaded up on notes.
He's got two of them, yep.
And meanhile,
one of them tells me to take off my ring.
Oh, your other ring.
Yeah.
Okay, the old shitty ring that wasn't even a real ring.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call it a shitty ring.
Well, okay, it wasn't a shitty ring, but it meant nothing. It was a show ring.
Yeah, basically. Well, I mean, it was a...
Drunk, I'm not downplaying your ring. I don't even know why I said that. Forget I said it.
It was a ring to figure out what size my finger was.
Oh, it was a trick ring is what it really was.
If that's what you want to call it, sure. I mean, she bought one for herself, too. So we knew what size her finger was. I mean, we're in our 30s, you know what I'm saying? We knew this was going down eventually.
It's the final countdown.
So...
Soon we'll all be dead.
Walk up, and next thing you know, fucking... Got friends and family and they're kind of in a bunch and like the bunch opens up like the fucking river of Moses and fucking I got Lindy standing there with a bouquet of different assorted beef jerky sticks.
Beef jerky?
Yeah, it was a beef jerky bouquet.
Wow.
And she's playing Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud on her little boombox.
Oh, wow.
No, I won't call it a boombox. I'll call it a Bluetooth speaker.
So she Lloyd Dobler'd you with a Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's funny, too, because, like, as the things open up, you know, friends and family are wanting to shake hands.
Drunk, by. May I ask, is that your song?
That will probably be our wedding song.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, walk up to her, and she gets on her knee and says, will you marry me? And then I said yes, and then I gave her a kiss and then helped her up and said hi to all the rest of my friends and family. And
did some betting?
Did a couple bets, ate a slice of pizza, had a couple beers, which I don't usually drink beers, but I had a couple beers, and... They had Killian's Irish Red there, so
non-traditional for the lady to ask.
Yeah. Well, she's we got a little. She's kind of the one that asked me out in the first place.
Yeah.
And then
is it because you're shy? You'd say you're shy by nature. You're a shy man.
Well, that's part of it, and so
she is not shy. I have met her. She has sold me things, Drunk.
She has. She's more shy than she leads on, but that's the salesperson in her. So, anywho, she came up to the warehouse where I work one day and invited me to go drinking at the bar with her on a Sunday after we got off, and I did. So that's kind of how that started. Well, anyway, about 2 years into it, we'd already been living together about a year and a half. I had asked her to marry me, and she said she wasn't ready yet. And I said, that's fine. Whenever you're ready, you have to ask me now.
Oh.
So.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah.
It's really a tale as old as time. Sailing to the east.
Yeah. So we've been together. It'll be
Beauty.
It's 6 years in March is what it was. So 6 years.
The Beast.
Yeah. So I'm in. I am officially engaged.
He's off the market, ladies.
My silicone ring is a map, and her silicone ring is a compass.
Wow. So they're themed.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
She's wild. She's, I mean.
Wild and crazy gal.
Yeah.
So.
So the reason I asked her to marry me when I did. So she was one of these I'm never getting married type chicks and I'm never having kids and daddy, daddy, daddy. Which, whatever, fine. Fine with both of them. Well, 1/4 of July, we got shit canned. Like, went to the bar, took 6 shots within a half an hour, then went to my parents, and then we both drank a fifth of vodka, kind of shit canned. And she planned our whole wedding, just blacked out drunk.
While you guys
didn't even remember any of it.
Oh.
And so the next day we went to...
Was it good?
I mean, it's basically the plan we're using, so...
Oh, really? Yeah. Did you write it down, or you just...
Yeah, no, she did. Yeah, yeah. So the next day we're at my wiff ball game, and she just so happened to come with me that day, even though she was hungover. I'm surprised she did. And Tom's wife went up to her and was like, "So, sweet plans, huh?" And she's like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "Your wedding." She's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." She's like, "Look at your phone.
I ain't getting married.
You,
I ain't having
you planned out your whole wedding. You know, you got your whole invitation list. Fucking, you know where you're going to have it. Daddy, daddy, daddy." So, a couple weeks after that, I asked her to marry me, and she said she wasn't ready yet. So,
well, she had to finalize some of those plans.
Right, even though she planned the whole damn thing on the 4th of July when she was blacked out, shit faced drunk. So,
when she gets drunk, does she even want you to slap her belly?
No, she doesn't.
No.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that hasn't happened in a while.
You think you've gotten past that point in your life?
Yeah, I think so.
Where you no longer require people to slap your belly?
Correct. Yeah, I don't require people slapping my belly anymore.
I guess that's nice.
That's when I was, you know, a little bit more of a aggressive man, I guess.
Drunk, do you remember Martin Shkreli, the pharma bro?
Maybe.
Okay, so he got really rich by charging too much for stuff.
Okay.
I think that's pretty much Martin Shkreli, the farmer bro. And eventually, I think he went to jail. I don't remember what he did. It's probably fraud, if I could guess.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think that like he like held anybody up by gunpoint.
Sure.
I think he did something related to like being kind of a piece of shit.
He Bernie Madoffed him.
Well, what happened was a while back, the Wu-Tang Clan.
What did you say this fellow's name was?
His name is Martin Shkreli. The Wu-Tang Clan put an album up for sale that they were only selling one copy of. And just whoever bid the most for it got a Wu-Tang Clan album that no one else could have. And he paid $2 million, and he got this magical Wu-Tang Clan album, and it's like in this big pretty silver box, and no one can have it because he has it. But now he's in jail for fraud or something. He owes the government money. You think that's tax fraud? You think that's what he did? Because he owes the government money, and so the government is selling his shit.
So I still don't remember this guy, but he says he's worth $27 million.
Well, he's selling his shit to pay back the government. And so the government auctioned off the Wu-Tang Clan album.
So he was a hedge. So he's basically Bernie Madoff. He's a hedge fund manager.
Oh, he Madoffed?
Hedge fund manager, convicted felon, body, body, body. Yeah, basically.
He's a shitty guy. Not a great guy. And so somebody, he bought it for $2 million, and then like the government sold it, and they said that he owed like $7.2 million, And after selling the Wu-Tang Clan album, like, now he doesn't owe anything. So it went for more than $7.2 million, this Wu-Tang Clan album.
Looks like he raised the price of a pill from $13.50 a pill to $750.
This is a pretty big
factor of 56.
Yeah, that's a lot. They say he has a punchable face. That's true. Saw a picture of him. He looked kind of punchable, didn't he? He looked like he shouldn't have that Wu-Tang Clan. That Wu-Tang's for the people.
Yeah.
And the album should belong to everyone.
Sure, yeah.
It's stupid that the Wu-Tang even did that. Fuck them. That's what I say. Yep. Guys, if you're hearing this, you shouldn't have even done that. The Wu-Tang is for the people. And so, fuck you. Let's start beef with the Wu-Tang Clan, Drum. That's what we should do.
No, that's the last thing I want to do, is start beef with the Wu-Tang Clan.
I say, at this point in our careers, Drunk, it's time we just start beef with the Wu-Tang Clan.
I'm out.
You sold your one album to Martin Shkreli. That guy's a douche. Why can't I hear that album, Wu-Tang Clan?
Well, whoever bought it or probably will release it, right?
Who knows? There's a guy who, I don't know if you know about fun dark web internet shit where people want to get like really good Twitter handles and social media accounts. Like there's a gal who had like @lizard, and people were like, fuck, man, I don't want to be lizard one. I want to be lizard.
Right.
And so there's actually like this huge market of dipshits try to hack all of these good Twitter handles.
Right. I wanted to be @drunk.
Couldn't be.
It's gone.
And so, like, if you have one of these boutique good Twitter handles, it could be worth a lot of money. Or you could just get your shit hacked, or you could get harassed to a point where, like, this guy had the handle Tennessee. I guess if you get on Twitter early, you can call like good names. So this guy had Tennessee. And so these hacker douches, they started like just fucking with him all the time because they wanted him to sell them Tennessee because they could sell it for more.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, give us Tennessee. He's like, no, I have it. I'm keeping it. Fuck you. And so,
man, if the money's right, I'm selling you my Twitter handle.
Well, I mean, you don't have a good one. For a while, I tried to get WFOD. WFOD belongs to the Wood Floors of Dallas. They never tweet. They suck. I tried buying it. I said, I'll give you like $20 for it. You don't use it.
Yeah.
You know. And
they said no.
They're gone. They don't respond. They don't know that I'm trying to get it for $20. But so Tennessee guy, they dox him. They figure out his address and stuff. They start sending.
So them. Let's just say you don't use your Twitter for like 7 years. Can that name just like go back into the ether or something? Or?
You'd think so, but I guess not. It just stays there forever. The fucking Wood Floors of Dallas. They're never gonna get it.
Who's
to
the
me.
Zuckerberg of Twitter?
Jack Dorsey. He's got a big bushy beard.
Maybe you can ask him.
I should. I'll tweet him after the show. Hey, man, 7 years, you don't use it, default that shit. So Tennessee guy starts getting pizzas that he didn't order, starts getting all kinds of shit, gets swatted, which is people call the cops on you and say he's got
drugs,
got guns in his house. He's shooting at the neighbors. And so the SWAT team shows up, and Tennessee, he's like, oh, my God. Has a heart attack, dies.
Jesus.
So the guy who swatted him, I mean, it's a crime.
Right. And how could he get Tennessee if he died because he never...
It results in a death, Drunk. What do you give somebody for that? What's the punishment?
Well, definitely not the Twitter handle.
You're Judge Drunk, the man who swatted Tennessee. He died of a heart attack.
Where does Tennessee live? In Tennessee?
Raleigh.
I guess it all depends on Tennessee's laws.
He got 5 years. 5 years for...
involuntary manslaughter.
I don't know. I think it was a whole bunch of stuff. They like threw a whole bunch of stuff. Then I think he just like pleaded to one thing.
I was about to say, I try to get him in at least 10.
A young man. Life, he's going to jail. He shall be forever tarnished. In poor Tennessee, he's dead.
How old was Tennessee?
Older guy.
Yeah.
He is a bit husky. Looked prone to heart attacks to begin with. But, I mean, we're not going to judge. I'm overweight too, Drunk. You swat me, I might die.
I'm very overweight. I probably will die.
I think that you should be congratulated.
Thank you.
Good job following the trail and getting to the final destination. It's not about the journey. It's about the final destination, right?
In theory, yeah.
And you got there, bud. You got there. The note thing, it didn't work.
It was a disaster. It's fine. It's fine.
You know what might be the fun way to do escape rooms is just try to figure out how it ends. Just go in there and just spend the whole time just trying to figure out what the end of it is without fucking around with all those other things.
And for all the inquiring minds, the date will be 04/20/23.
2023?
Yeah.
That's so far away.
It's a year and a half. Oh. I think that far.
I don't know. 2023, it just seems so far away. A lot can happen in that time.
So, yeah, we're getting married on a Thursday on 420 in Colorado.
Oh, I didn't even put together the 420 thing. In Colorado?
In Colorado.
Why?
That's what she wants. Oh. What am I going to tell my wife that I don't want to do what she wants to do? That's starting the relationship off on the wrong foot. Don't you say?
Was that part of her drunken plan?
Twas.
We're going to get married in Colorado on 420.
Yep.
Well, what day of the week does 420/22 land on?
I don't know.
Sangria.
It won't be our 10th anniversary. It'll be our 8th anniversary by then.
It tastes meaty. Guys, what we're going to do, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we are going to talk to Andrew Heaton, a good friend of the program. Looking forward to
it. It's my guy.
Andrew Heaton is your guy?
I'm still upset it's not Patricia Heaton, but it's all right.
Guys, we'll be back.
WFOD! The Greater Los Angeles Necroplex by Andrew Heaton. Pretty as a cinder block smeared with lipstick, oh, blight of traffic and concrete dumpsters, thy principal building material is bathroom tiling grout. Drenched in sunlight as compensation, like a chef at Applebee's, drowning freeze-dried sadness in cheese, to hide the shame. The shame. All the beauty of a parking lot, and yet, ironically, you will never find a parking space. Watch them toss palm trees at strip malls to gussy up the streets like injecting Botox into a corpse. Behold! The concrete slabs with squares gouged out, where dreamers peek from cramped rooms to gaze at hobos masturbating into open sewers. Hard square lines and jarring angles. Every neighborhood is the used tire district. Enjoy yon liquor store with bars across the panes. There are no parks, but there are a lot of tent villages. Tis not a city, but a meat grinder. devours skinny hopefuls, and burps out chunks of porn star. Warm, but humid. The wet spot on the bed you just made with your crazy ex, who's probably lying about birth control. Los Angeles is a prison yard with sparklers, chugging champagne beneath an overpass, a public toilet with a boob job, Instagram filters on a dead harlot. That's some grade A high distillate poetry right there. Your move, former National Poet Laureate Natasha Trethewey.
Maybe you've seen the recent controversy surrounding the mixed race family in our ad. Us here at Old Navy are pretty excited to be heralded as heroes of diversity. It's a tough climate out there, and we'll take all the free publicity we can get. I mean, all we did is stand a white dude next to a black chick. It's not exactly the Underground Railroad, you know? Honestly, we could give a fuck less about interracial couples. Whether you're white, black, Asian, or whatever the rock is, ultimately our goal is just to sell you pants. But hey, if every news outlet wants to run our ad without us paying them for it, we can pass those savings to you with all dresses now up to 40% off. Old Navy. Never basic.
And pass the potatoes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Once again.
WFOD. Wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Guys, welcome back. Our guest tonight is the host of the Political Orphanage podcast, described as politics minus bile plus jokes. He is also the author of a new poetry book, Los Angeles is Hideous, Poems About an Ugly City. Returning to the program, the mighty Andrew Heaton is here.
How you been, man?
Been doing okay. How are you?
I'm well. I'm in Tulsa and doing all the weird shit I do.
You're in Tulsa now?
I'm in Tulsa, yeah. So I had been in Los Angeles, and then I ended up getting a grant to move to Oklahoma, or to Tulsa specifically, and so I took that and have been here since May.
I was going to say, it seems like you just move constantly. Every time I hear you, you're moving somewhere else.
It certainly feels that way. It wasn't really the plan. I mean, I moved to Los Angeles thinking I'd be there for a while, but then lockdown happened.
Uh-huh.
And so ended up moving again. I don't know. We'll see how Tulsa's really just going to be a question of, are there women I can date here? I don't know. Most of them seem to be married by 18, so I'm not sure. That'll probably be what the whole experiment hinges on.
Well, you don't necessarily have to find women, right? You just have to find one good one.
That's true. That's right. I have to find one. Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, that's the goal, right?
That is in fact the goal, particularly for a 37-year-old dude like me. I am far more interested in closing up shop and getting that nailed down.
So, Andrew, I think that we've talked to just about we've talked to pet psychics, we've talked to actors and comedians and musicians. I don't think we've ever talked to a poet before, an Amazon best-selling poet.
I was about to say, I'm actually a best-selling poet at this point, which is not what I thought my career was going to be doing at this point, but here we are. Yeah, I am the best-selling, number one best-selling poetry author of Los Angeles is Hideous, Poems About an Ugly City. I think it is fairly self-explanatory. It's a coffee table book making fun of Los Angeles. Don't worry for listeners that aren't into poetry. It's really a series of jokes that are shoveled into your mind using poems. Poems are the shovel to deliver the goods, which is laughter. So it's a funny coffee table book making fun of Los Angeles.
Do you think that other poets will be mad at you?
I'm very curious to see how that goes. I don't think that they'll be mad at me. I actually had a very nice review left by somebody that I know is both a New York Times bestselling author and a Wall Street Journal bestselling author. And he was like, yeah, this is actually good poetry. Like he basically said, if you didn't have a sense of humor and you read this, you'd go, this is good poetry. So I don't think they're going to be mad at me. I am curious to see how how people in Los Angeles respond, which so far has been pretty nice. I had sent an advance copy to a friend of mine in L.A., and he sent me the nicest email that's like, hi, this is funny, but I can't finish it because it's just too depressing about where I live. And I was like, fair enough, man. I don't blame you. It's basically a book slagging where you live and describing why it's a terrible place to live. But he wasn't mad about it. So I haven't had any big outcry. Nobody seems to be wanting my head on a platter. I think in part because most of the people in Los Angeles know it's not a terribly attractive city. They're just there because they fear winter where they want to work in film.
Yeah, they're there because that's where the opportunities are. I don't think anybody would disagree with anything you said. I mean, I've been to L.A. once and it wasn't great. Too much traffic. It's mm-hmm. I mean, it's yeah. hot. And I have no plans to ever go back. And I think call. That everyone who lives there probably knows what you're saying is true. They just hate themselves, and that's where they've decided to be.
Yeah, that's pretty much my take on it. I mean, I do think there are a lot of people that just love summer, and that's the only season they like, and they want to be near a beach. And for them, there are positive things about Los Angeles. I'm still kind of baffled by that because it's like, right, you know, you could go any direction between here and Alaska and find a beach.
Drive an hour north or drive an hour south.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Or really just kind of drive.
Still be warm.
East some and maybe go to the beach every now and then.
Right. Exactly. Which is what I would do. I think there are some people that thinks it's an attractive city. There's a tiny minority of people that live in gorgeous houses and gorgeous neighborhoods because there are some good places. Malibu's pretty. There are some nice places, but you and I aren't going to go there. We're not going to live there. We're going to be skittering in between ugly adobe houses the way hermit crabs go from beer can to a slightly larger beer can. So for most people, I think it's just, you know, a asphalt carbuncle.
Do you offer any, because this is something that I like about you, your podcasts and your other work is you seem to be more focused on coming up with solutions to things rather than just saying why other people's stuff is dumb.
I appreciate that. And I, you know what, I do really incorporate that into my work, particularly the political orphanage, which is my podcast and day job. I focus very much on that. And I also will say that I try to concern myself with tackling bad ideas rather than going on character attacks, which is why I am not a very well-known political satirist, because the order of the day is to do character attacks. I don't really like doing that so much. I steered away from that in the book, in fact. There are one or two poems making fun of people in Los Angeles, but I didn't want to make it. I didn't want the book to be people in Los Angeles are bad. I have some very close friends that live in Los Angeles. I'm sure that there's lots of wonderful people that live there. I didn't get to meet them because I was in lockdown while I was there, but it's probably there, right? So I focused on just how hideous the thing is. I didn't have like solutions on how to make it better in there. It would have been interesting to have a problem-solving poem. However, I did highlight some of the underlying conditions that make Los Angeles so horrible. For example, there's a poem in the book called Sprawl by Edict, where I talk about how the reason that Los Angeles is the sprawling mass with horrible traffic is not random. It's because there were racist city fathers in the 40s through the 60s, perhaps later, but this is when the events took place, that outlawed multifamily dwelling units in Los Angeles. By the way, this is all far funnier in the book than I'm explaining it right now. I'm going into policy mode with you. But they went, oh, no, black people might move to our city. They didn't want that, so they banned apartment buildings because black people were typically moving to apartment buildings more. And they had another thing that they could do as well. There was a phenomenon at the time called neighborhood covenants, where if you were going to buy a house, everyone in the neighborhood had to approve you. You had to be the right kind of person to move into a particular neighborhood. And so it basically allowed neighborhoods to do the outsourcing of prohibiting black people from living anywhere. So the result of all of this was and is – that it's basically illegal to build up in Los Angeles. 80% of the developable real estate in Los Angeles is not zoned for multifamily units. That is to say that 80% of the land you could currently build houses on in Los Angeles have to be houses. They can't be apartment buildings.
Oh, geez.
They can't be duplexes. They can't be, which makes no sense in the second largest or second most populous city in the United States. But it explains why the city's growth pattern is like pouring out really cheap Craigslist maple syrup on a hot driveway and watching it bubble at, you know, 3 millimeters of height across this expanse and then solidifying into something ugly and nasty. And so I do touch on that there are reasons Los Angeles is so awful and they could alleviate these things.
Is that still in effect?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
They did change it a little bit. They've now Los Angeles has, to its credit, it has lifted some of the restrictions where you can now have what's called it's called a mother-in-law unit or an ACU, an accessory or ADU accessory dwelling unit. You could theoretically, on a one-family house, you could build like a standalone garage that is its own little like tiny house bedroom kind of thing that theoretically you could rent out. So they've now done it to where if you have a house, you could basically have somebody rent a building from you on that property, like a tiny house or something like that. So in effect, they've kind of legalized duplexes, sort of, but they need to go a lot further.
But as far as the traffic problem, you would think that not having a lot of apartments and stuff would make the traffic better, right? Or is that
no? I don't think so at all. Well, because partly, I mean, if you want to solve traffic problems, I'm going to put on my SimCity hat for a minute. You need to do basically one of two things. You either need to reduce the population of the city, or you need to have much more concentrated urban pockets that can rely on public transportation. That way, you're effectively dividing the population into cars and subways and buses and things like that.
So everybody's spread out.
Exactly. The more disparate and spread out a population is, the less effective the public transportation is. And what happens in LA is basically all the poor people just get shoved to the edge of the city more and longer and have to commute in like 2 hours a day to get to their place and then come back. And so if they were to remove that restriction and allow LA to build apartment buildings and ideally skyscrapers and things like that, you could actually see there being reasonably useful public transit. There are some subways in Los Angeles right now, which I guess will be good if we ever enter a Planet of the Apes kind of thing where the population needs to go to the underground layers to worship a nuclear bomb or something weird like that.
Elon building a bunch of tunnels?
He's wanting to. I don't know. I'm doubting. I have my doubts as to whether that's going to work or not. But they have subways right now. They're not really that useful. And if you have a car, like, what are you going to do? Like, why are you going to drive to the subway, park your car, get on the subway, go to another location? It none of it really ends up making sense unless they get rid of all of these underlying problems.
Because nobody would be close enough to the subway to get on the subway to go somewhere. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Andrew, I wanted to ask you, you probably don't remember doing our show several years ago, but
I remember.
On March 6th, 2018.
That's what I was going to say, March 6th, 2018. That's
you remember that day like it was yesterday, I imagine. But
right, exactly.
What's weird is we talked a lot about the show that you were doing on Reason, Mostly Weekly.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And how much we liked it. And on March 14th, 2018, you ended that show for good. And so I assume that you had already recorded or had already written the series finale. Were you biting your tongue? Could you not tell us that it was ending? Or what happened there, Andrew?
Because I don't want to be – I don't want to put – bad juju on you, but our conversation ended that series. After you and I spoke, I was like, I just can't do this anymore. He's highlighted some structural problems. I don't remember the exact timeline that happened. That's probably the case, is that that I didn't want to say we were ending. That way it was going to bum everybody out and that kind of thing. But I don't recall exactly what the timeline was on that. And then on that, I still work with Meredith and Austin. We still do funny videos. I'm still friends with Sarah Siskin, the head writer from that. But I was leaving from New York to, at that time, Austin, Texas. And while I was okay, I was happy to continue doing it. It just became a kind of logistical improbability, and then Sarah quit working with Reason, and these projects just kind of dissipate sometimes.
And then you started another podcast, and then that ended, and now you're doing the Political Orphanage, which is primarily funded by your Patreon. It is patreon.com/AndrewHeaton.
100%.
And that's great, by the way.
Thank you.
I enjoy it. It's weird because it, like I said, it seems like you don't get into the same thing that everyone else gets into, where it's something different because you're actually trying to like propose solutions.
It's very kind of you to say that. I appreciate that. And you're exactly right. That is what I'm trying to do. I've worked in partisan media before. I don't like it. And I think that much of the time what's happening in the media landscape is most people don't want to really be challenged or really even learn stuff. What they want to have is their opinion reaffirmed back to them.
Yeah.
And I find that just insanely boring. And I think that it's also just negligent as a journalist to do that. And I've now started calling myself a journalist because I think everybody else is doing such a shoddy job. Not everybody, but a lot of people are doing such a shoddy job where if you're a talking head, you're a pundit, and you know the answer to every question before the question is posed, and it's one answer, which is the Democrats are evil or the Republicans are evil,
right?
Or, you know, all government action on any planet in this or timeline or anywhere else is always evil.
Why even talk to anybody? You got it figured out, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I find that very boring. I don't think that you learn anything from it. I think it's very easy morality to do that. And I know a lot of political hacks that do just that, where they know they've got a specific audience. They need to put their back up against the wall. And if they're not sure what's going on, then they don't have all the facts on the ground, just start slamming the enemy, whatever that is. I try very hard to figure out what's actually going on. And my approach has always been, I think most of us are on the same team, which is we want a peaceful, prosperous, safe country that's tolerant. That's what most people want, libertarian, Republican, Democrat. And most of us are fighting about the solutions to the problems that we all acknowledge. And that's always how I've been approaching it. I try to be very intellectually humble in that I've been wrong about a ton of stuff in the past. So I would like to hear from people that have a different perspective than me, because maybe they'll either shore up my bad defenses and make me smarter in what I already think, or maybe I'll go, you know what, I was wrong about this thing and I need to change my position on this to better comport with reality as now explained to me. And so, I endeavor to find a place for people who are really not served by the current political landscape of red team versus blue team ad nauseum, and go, you know, if that's not something that you feel like you're gaining stuff from, and you feel like this weird, you know, island of misfit toys character, I'm like, I'm creating an eye of the storm for us.
Does anybody ever try to internet fight you? Because it doesn't seem like anybody really ever messes with you, either that or you just don't engage in it.
I don't engage. Yeah. I think we're going to look back at Twitter as we designed an entire social media system to exacerbate pathological emotional problems in people. And I every once in a while I'll get baited into it. But I generally steer clear of politics on Twitter because I don't find it to be remotely conducive to discourse at all. I find it's performative. So that is to say, if you and I are talking one-on-one, we're at a bar, and you're in favor, we should absolutely have the Obama nuclear treaty with Iran, and I theoretically am completely against it. When we're talking to each other one-on-one, we can actually trade ideas, but it's very different when we're not at a bar, we're in an arena, and everybody that follows you can hear what you're saying, because you're no longer talking to me, you're talking at me for the benefit of the people that follow you. And that alters everything, and it makes people stupid, and it makes people mean and nasty because they know that they can get great plumes of self-righteous anger and little dopamine bursts by saying mean things to strangers who are probably tweeting back at them from a toilet.
It's kind of like being on Jerry Springer. Yeah. You go on Jerry Springer, and instead of just talking to your wife, you have to, you know, yell at your wife and call her a prostitute.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it's like, I don't want to do that. I'm kind of, I, I get really frustrated with some of my friends that spend so much time fighting on Twitter because I'm like, you could learn guitar. There's so many things you could do, particularly with my comedian friends. And they're getting a little bit better now that President Grandpa's passing out Benadryl to the country. But yeah. During the Trump years, there were all these funny people I knew that just decided I'm not funny anymore. I'm a part-time pundit. And I generally agreed with them. I was an anti-Trump guy.
Sure.
But I still was funny. And wasn't, you know, spending all my time fighting with strangers. So I avoid that. I find that if I'm going to do political stuff, which I do, it is my day job. I do it in my, I might do a newsletter, but that tends to be a very self-selective audience. But for the most part, it'll be a podcast. And my experience is that very few people that listen to my podcast ever go, well, you're clearly a deranged bigot or anything like that. I did an episode here about 6 months ago on raising the national minimum wage to $15 an hour, which I think would be disastrous. And I say this as somebody who's really rooting for poor people. I'm on team poor people.
Oh, sure.
And so I did this episode of basically going, to me, the conversation we're having is a bunch of people sitting around a table saying, you know, cancer's so horrible. It's all cancer's awful. It's so horrible.
Don't you kind of want to meet pro-cancer guy, though?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. There might be some cartoonish version of like a weird Darwinian Republican around, but I don't know any. But you know, cancer's so horrible. That's why we have to have a federal subsidy for Advil to cure cancer. And I go, hey, agree, cancer's bad. Totally want to alleviate cancer too. I don't think Advil's the way to do it, gang. And then everybody goes, well, you just don't care about cancer. If you cared about cancer, you'd want to give everybody Advil. And then I have to go, right, again, I think you're missing my point here. I'm not saying cancer's not bad. I'm saying Advil won't fix it. And it turns into this thing. Well, I did a whole episode on minimum wage, and I was really pleasantly surprised. I had a lot of people reach out to me that was like, you know, I came into your show thinking you were am I allowed to swear on here?
Sure.
Thinking you were a dickhead. And because it was just titled Don't Raise the Minimum Wage. And they went, I still am in favor of raising the minimum wage, but you did make me think about it. And you made me consider that we could overdo it. And I found most people that listened to the show that had been gung ho about minimum wage came out going, all right, maybe we should do it like state by state. Maybe we should exempt certain businesses. Like they at least approached it in a more nuanced policy manner,
or maybe just if we raise the minimum wage to $15, that's not all that we need to do. Maybe there's
lots of different things, but I never had anybody go, like, anybody that listened to it. I don't know, if you listen to like an hour long podcast with a thoughtful, compassionate person, it's generally hard to like root for them to burst into flame. But on Twitter, you're just shouting bumper stickers at people, and other people, and like you're trolling people to hate you so that your followers can see you getting mudslung at you, so that they come to your aid and all this stuff. So I mostly hate social media.
But you need it because you have to tell people you have things that you're trying to sell.
Yeah. If you can figure out how to circle that square, let me know. Because I'm not terribly good at it. I find Twitter is actually very good for networking, for bringing on guests and for meeting people. So I like it in that capacity. It's good for like telling jokes too, weirdly enough, because it is just big enough for a joke. Problem with my career is if you want to make a big splash in media doing political commentary, what you really want to do is hoist a giant banner over your ship that says Republicans are evil bigots or Democrats are evil commies or whatever. And since I won't do that, and I'm trying to actively court audiences that are nuanced and have a moderate disposition and like being challenged, it's cool when they find me. But it takes a long time to find them, and they don't have one place they hang out at. Like the Republicans all hang out at the same tent. The Democrats all hang out at the same tent. There's really not like a banner for like civil discourse and rational inquiry. Like that's a very difficult thing to do.
But so you're one of the only ones. So it's niche. So all the people who like that come to you.
Yeah, when they find out. But that's the other thing is I have to figure out
how to get there.
Yeah. And I, you know, hopefully what I've found to be, you know, reasonably helpful the last couple of years is just going on a lot of shows like your show. And people go, that guy's, I don't know, he seems pretty smart, kind of funny. I'll listen to a show. And then it's like they've been out in the heat and they walk into a building with air conditioning and they're like, oh, and then they meet other nice people. But I'll say one of the other cool things is the audience that I've cultivated is so nice. Like I know people in media that are kind of afraid to cross their audience because their audience is very whatever their thing is. And so they have to be, they have to really tiptoe around some stuff. Every once in a while, I've got some like one or two issues that I'm like, I'm going to be careful with this. But for the most part, when my audience gets angry, they get like Canadian.
Right.
Like the hate mail I get is like, "Dear Mr. Heaton, I love your show. I think you're wonderful. But I really took issue with what you said last week and did not think it was correct. Here are three reasons I think you were wrong. I think you should talk to this guest about his position. He would do a good job of explaining why you were wrong. Sincerely, your listener." And I'm like, "So you just told me I was awesome and did my work for me in terms of getting future guests. Great. Fantastic. Thank you very much."
And your listeners are passionate, too. So if you ever do like a lose it on something, you can probably sick them on whatever you choose to attack violently. If this is all a facade.
I suppose I have an army if I need one. So far we've been Switzerland in that regard, but if I got canceled or something, I bet I could rally some troops.
Yeah. Yeah. So everybody take note. he's lying low, but you never know. Don't cross him. So, yeah. Andrew, I won't take up any more of your time. The book is Los Angeles is Hideous, Poems About an Ugly City. You have laisugly.com, which I can't believe wasn't taken already.
I too am amazed. So a pitch to your audience. It is a funny coffee table book. If you put it on your coffee table, people will laugh when they see it. You will laugh when you read it. And so if you enjoy having funny things and you want a little bite-sized burst of comedic humor poking fun at the ugliest city in California, probably America, perhaps the world, Los Angeles is Hideous is for you.
And it's at Mighty Heaton. Follow Andrew. Let him know you heard him here. Andrew, we appreciate your time, man. It's always good catching up with you. And
good to be back. Thanks for letting me get. And your audience doesn't know this. I jerked you around logistically too. Just like we agreed we were going to do it, that I emailed you. It was like, I'm an idiot and I forgot we live on a globe and I don't know how time zones work. Can we do it half an hour early?
Andrew, I get it. You move so much.
Right. Yeah.
I understood. Yeah, right, as soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, well, of course he moves all the time.
Well, actually, you know what? This is my third city in 4 days, just because I'm doing the book tour. So I am a little bit winded. I hope I sounded coherent because I'm winded and slightly hungover. But that's because I was celebrating last night with my friend, for the record, celebrating becoming number one poetry bestseller.
Amazon bestselling poet Andrew Heaton.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Thanks.
And it was fun. Thank you for having me on again.
Appreciate it. Take care, man.
You too.
Drunk, buddy.
Man.
Hey, Andrew Heaton, am I right?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, he tried to reach out to our listeners and say, "Hey, man, you know, if you want to hear what I got, come over here." And what I thought we should probably do,
yeah,
is reach out to his listeners, because maybe we got that sweet, sweet retweet.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows the future, Drunk? Maybe we did.
We could be...
Some of Andrew Heaton's fans might be listening to this. And what I can appeal to them is, guys, we're not smart.
Nope.
But we try really hard.
We do.
That's all. Drunk, you got a pick of the week, buddy? Something you want the people to know about?
Sure, Drunk's pick of the week. Week 2 of the Olympics. Keep watching those. Support the USA, USA.
I hear USA. The ratings, they're way down.
Well, they say that, but, you know, streaming is way up. Everybody's cut the cord, and they don't count the streams.
Oh, they don't count the streams?
They don't count the streams.
Well, then what are they talking about?
Exactly. What are we talking about?
Yeah. Drunk, pick of the week. I watched a film on Netflix. It's called a Gunpowder Milkshake. And it's bad. It's a dumb movie, but it's great.
I'm just trying to think of how that would taste.
A gunpowder milkshake?
That's probably not good.
It's like a hokey lady John Wick is what it is. It's hokey lady John Wick.
But it's good enough to view and have be your pick of the week.
Absolutely. Pick of the week, Gunpowder Milkshake. You watch it. It's on Netflix. Doesn't cost you nothing. Just watch it. It's dumb. It's got some good fights in it. That Karen Gillan, she's fun to watch.
Oh, from Jumanji?
I like her.
Well, you said the magic word. I might have to check it out now.
Yeah. So, guys, we did it. We appreciate
fucking
you.
Did it.
You checking it out. Guys, we'll be back next week. It's a whole fucking thing.
It's a whole thing?
Like, we do it, and then we just do it. We do it again.
Hell yeah.
We do it again.
I'm Bill Dan.
Thank you for listening to this installment of WFOD. To enjoy our back catalog, visit WFODshow.com and be sure to share the show with a friend. Thank you to our Patreon sponsors for their continued support, Amanda Napier, Liquid Lozenge, Valerie Carpenter, and Brian Kranz. If you would like to donate to keep this pirate ship afloat, visit patreon.com/WFODix. Follow us on social media, email any one of us with our name at WFODshow.com, or leave us a voicemail at 636-487-HAND. A thank you also goes out to Carl Casey at White Bat Audio for the music we used this week. Until next time, signing off. Goodbye.
I want you to know it's over.
Well, bye.